You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Welcome to My Vagina. This is Jessie Caron.
And I'm Rebecca Frank. And here we are again having our current historical, hysterical, infuriating conversation about our lives as vagina-having organisms.
All content made up on the spot, but probably researched. Just kidding, you fools. It's definitely researched. Hey guys, happy new year. And I guess like belated happy holidays. We hope that your holidays were better than mine.
Yeah, I hope your holidays were better than Jesse's also. Mine were fine. I went to my friend Miriam's house. She's lovely. And I pet all of the animals.
Yeah.
And it was great.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, it was great.
So I went home and I had a very, for me, a troubling experience going home this past holiday. And I'm actually really curious what all of our listeners think in terms of how to approach family. I think especially after the apocalypse election in 2016, everyone's been like chaotic about who and how to be an ally and how do you talk to especially people that you love when you don't agree with them.
Right. And like, and what role do we have to do the work to kind of be a positive influence when, mm-hmm. when like people of color shouldn't be bearing the brunt of our racist family members.
Absolutely.
If we can help. But yeah. Like, how do we do that?
Yeah. And also when does it become detrimental to your family?
Yeah. And your relationships.
And my relationship with them. So I went home and let's just start off with the best part is that my uncle called me a fucking commie bitch and told me that I didn't know anything about American history.
And my response when she told me that he called her a commie bitch was like, I honestly didn't know. I thought that was one of the like basic bullshit comebacks on the internet. I didn't know people actually said that to somebody else's face. IRL.
Believe it. IRL. The whole room gasped. And we mess around in that way where like, you know, you both don't necessarily completely agree, but we still want to be in the same room together and there's still love there. So like, you know, he calls me a feminazi and a socialist on, every other holiday. And right. I usually just like laugh and shrug it off unless he talks about something that matters. And so a good portion of the time I have been standing up and my family has been talking less to me about stuff. But when they do, I bring it up. But this time it happened so much and my head was spinning and I didn't know how to approach it. One of her friends came over and used the word, and I apologize because this is a terrible term and I don't want to say it, but gooks.
Which I didn't know existed like after the end of the Vietnam War. Like I thought that like there was a horrible word used during that time. And then everyone was like, oh God, what a terrible word. And then it just went away, but it didn't.
It apparently did not.
No.
And they were using like every stereotype in the book. The story was about people driving.
Oh Jesus.
Somebody used the word guinea and guinea plank. And I was like, I didn't even know that was a thing anymore.
I didn't either.
And then the thing that I didn't tell, I don't think I told you this yet.
Oh,
I
God.
Did tell you that they said something I think it was anti-Semitic.
Yeah, it probably was.
Or I think it was going that way.
Yeah.
But
you put the kibosh.
Yeah. Actually, my mom did. And
oh.
I do love her for this. I mean, she did it in a very, okay, let's stop talking about this kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
But I came into the conversation when her friend was going, you know, Jews, they don't act like Jews anymore.
What does that mean?
And I went, excuse me?
I don't know what that means.
And she went, you know, they're not Jewy. They don't act like Jews. And I was like, excuse me, what the fuck does that mean? And my mom went, oh, I'm sure Jesse's friends will be really happy to hear that. and kind of diverted the conversation and was like, we're done.
Oh my God.
And was like, cool, dinner's out. Cause I was like, I think she saw like the fire in my face. Cause yeah. I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Exactly.
What does that mean? In her eyes, is this like an improvement or have we like, is being less Jewy better or is it worse? Like, did she miss the Jews of yore? I want
to
know.
I think there's really no way to make that right.
Yeah. I'm just like so confused.
There was no way that was headed in a direction that
no,
was positive.
It certainly wasn't. But like, where was it
what
going?
What does she mean?
Yeah. Like, have we not been bartering enough? Yeah. Perhaps? Have we not been running the financial markets as well as we used to?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right? Do you eat less children?
But they're so delicious. I haven't seen any horns on them Jews in a while. It's a lot harder to figure out who they are.
I just don't know who's a Jew anymore.
So hard. Remember when they used to wear stars?
That was when we could tell. Maybe that's the thing, is she doesn't know how to identify yeah, Jews anymore.
We just blend so well, you know?
Holy shit. So yeah,
just in case people don't know, I'm a Jew. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I'm probably not allowed to be.
No, it's fine. You're with me.
I do think you should be an ally. I do think you should speak up. But like, it got to a point where I was like, do I completely sever my ties with my family?
Right. Right.
And what comes of that? Do they actually learn anything?
Right. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is like one of the things that I don't know that, and I'm sure this conversation happens a lot. I haven't been privy to it or read anything about it before, but holiday, when you're like in your situation, you were like an island in a sea mm-hmm. and you're not going, you would need somebody else to be like, I need to stand up to be with you for that to even start impacting.
Yeah.
I think it's like,
yeah, that's a good point.
What are you going to do at a dinner table when you're like, you can't leave. You don't have anywhere to go. Like mm-hmm. you know, and like, I think it's a matter of like, almost like picking people off mm-hmm. and, you know, finding the people that you can really talk to and change yeah. their mind. And like, eventually as time goes, be like in this circumstance, like even if your mom or somebody else did what she did was like, I don't think we should talk about this right now, you know? And I agree with Jesse, but I don't think we should talk about this.
Yeah.
Like anything like that, just to like shut some people up because yeah. coming from like everyone expects you to say something, mm-hmm. but it's a matter of finding someone else who can even be like something of an ally who people are more willing to listen to. Cause clearly yeah. a lot of those people weren't willing to listen to you.
But that, yeah. And that's the thing is like, that's also made me have even less power because me bringing stuff up is like, of course she's going to get political right now.
Right.
And I fucking don't even like getting political. I don't even want to. You know, at one point, one of the dudes was like, he was making fun of his daughter's boyfriend for crying. And I was like, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
And he was like, that's, you can't cry. And I was like, why? And he was like, because you have to be a man. And I was like, I think that's a really big problem. And he was like, no, you're allowed to get pissed. And I was like, And I went, ugh, and my mom went, don't get political. And I was like, I'm not getting political. I was like, but this is what I do. This is like what I invest my time in learning. Because if you want to look up statistics with me right now, we can talk about that. Because what you just basically said is a really big reason why we have such a high domestic violence
Absolutely.
Issue. I was like, yeah. I was like, you basically just said, don't cry, get fucking pissed off. And that's how women get hit.
Right. And it's also like, and that's to me, like, that's not political. What you're talking about is a huge percentage of the population basically being kept in like a cultural jail of their own emotions. Like yeah. they're not able to use their own emotions. And like, I know that like I get frustrated with myself sometimes when I get really upset and I'll mm-hmm. start crying just because I'm so overwhelmed with emotion. But at yeah. least I have that opportunity that like if I get angry and I get in an argument with somebody, I'll cry afterwards. And that's an acceptable release for me to have.
Yeah. And everyone deserves
and
that.
Everyone deserves it.
That's not a gendered thing. That yeah. is everyone deserves to have that emotional outlet.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be made fun of for fucking crying. That's
no.
garbage.
No, you should be celebrated for it. Like I also don't think that people realize that like just because it might be a controversial opinion doesn't make it a political one.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think that opinion is controversial in a lot of places.
Yeah.
And not even necessarily, like, I don't know that people would make the argument, not all people would make the argument that men shouldn't cry. A lot of people would. But the just the way that society
you have to be a man.
Yeah, conditions men to not communicate their emotions in a productive fashion is the reason that we have kids getting shot in schools and movie theaters and yoga classes.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's not even about domestic violence. It's about violence in general and like how that, what that turns into.
Yep. Yep. Ugh.
Yeah. Happy fucking New Year.
Yeah. But you're back now.
So I'm back now.
You're back.
Oh, before we get into talking to the lovely ladies of Frau Pow, we would really like for people to review us. I know we've said this before, but it really, really helps us. And we keep getting all these lovely text messages and emails, but it really helps us get bumped up on the podcast list if you review us. Please.
Yeah, like give us stars and leave us a little message. We got a wonderful message this week, a great review. And it bumps us up and it warms our hearts.
Yeah.
So it just like,
let us know what we're doing something right.
Yeah, please. Please. And sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah.
Since we're here, go to welcometomyvagina.com and scroll down a little bit and then a little thing will pop up and it'll say, sign up for the newsletter. And then you can put your email in and you'll hear from us every week, every other week podcast version and the other weeks in your email inbox.
Inbox.
Yeah.
Cool. Now we're going to do a quick interview for the ladies of Frau Pow, another podcast on the More Banana Network that you should listen to.
Definitely listen.
Do it. Rags plays roller derby and she's a strong woman. And she also studied medieval history and philosophy. That's fun.
Odd also plays roller derby and has a master's in gender studies.
What is this? Roller derby?
Welcome to Skate Night at the Warehouse.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you guys?
Good.
Girls. Damn it.
I know.
People.
I keep doing that.
Humans?
I keep doing that. Yeah, humans.
I've been trying to do friends.
Yeah, I do friends.
I like friends a lot.
Hi, gang.
Cool. We're happy to have you, but who are you?
Well, I'm Rags. My proper name is Ragnarok, but they call me Rags.
My name is Odd. Audacity.
What is Frau Pow?
Frau Pow is a podcast where we talk about all the things that make people uncomfortable, such as our most recent episode came out about depression. So we interviewed our teammate about her living with depression. And we talk about things as well, such as sexual assault and basically any isms that drive people up the walls. So, you know, sexism, misogyny, racism, everything that just is like, you don't want to talk about it at the dinner table. Mm. We want to talk about it. Like, nice. Bring it. Let's talk.
What's your roller derby team? Just really quick. And I don't want to get back to the podcast again.
New Jersey Roller Derby. There's a bunch of roller derby teams in New Jersey.
Oh, there's too many, actually.
There's a lot of teams. Think of basically how like every city center in the United States basically has a team based out of it. And like Morristown has two teams based out of it.
Really?
Actually, technically three, because there's also a juniors team.
Wow.
Based out of it. I mean, they're part of our team, but we do have a juniors team as well. Mm. It's basically.
It makes no sense. It also leaves us without officials to run our games.
Yeah,
my friend used to skate for Gotham Girls like a long time ago in like the early 2000s. And the only reason I say this is that her roller derby name was Margaret Thrasher.
Oh my God, that's a good thing.
Literally the only thing I know about roller derby.
Do you guys talk about that on the podcast?
No.
Humans?
Not really.
You don't?
No. We bring in people from roller derby, but roller derby is a bit of a microcosm of the bigger real world, you know. Like, my partner and I would never have met if it wasn't for roller derby. She's a graphic designer. She lived in New Jersey. I lived in New York as a logistics specialist. Like, there was no way that our lines were ever going to cross. But because of roller derby, we were able to meet. We have people on our team who are biochemists, people who work in, like, schools and stuff, just people who would never normally cross paths because of their career. So like we don't really talk about the sport, but we use the connections and the community to bring people in and talk about it because
it's awesome.
A lot of the people that you meet in roller derby are people who are struggling with something or other because
they all intend to be like misfits.
Yeah. Misfits, even like in the psychological terms, where like they may have like really bad anxiety and they might be using roller derby to help kind of beat their anxiety or learn better coping methods. Mm-hmm. So we kind of use roller derby as that diving board to get into these topics, mm-hmm. but we don't really talk about the actual game. There is a podcast that does that. From okay. Rochester, so we're not stepping on their toes.
Yeah. Also, it's like not very interesting for people who don't know about roller derby right, to talk about roller derby.
Exactly.
It would be super niche. But yeah, the other stuff is, you know, things that everyone can relate to. Like, now that we have more of a among women specifically that I know, it's a lot more acceptable to acknowledge, you know, anxiety or fears or, you know, stuff like that. So I think it's probably super helpful to be able to find a spot that you can go and listen to other people talk about it and kind of like it makes you feel more normal when you know you're mm-hmm. not the only one going through something. Yeah. So that's really cool.
Exactly. And I think that roller derby teams tend to be like very inclusive and like supported places, especially for women's teams. I think just like you're saying, because we're all fairly like-minded, and Justin, we're in a safe space that it becomes like very uplifting to be there.
Right. So people that you wouldn't think would have the guts to play roller derby.
Yeah.
Because roller derby is a very hard sport. Surprise you. Yeah. And I'm not saying this like as like to put anybody down. It's just that like you look at somebody and, you know, you make this face value judgment and then you watch them play and you're like, I did not see that coming. And it's actually really amazing to actually get to talk to them because mm-hmm. we all have something. I firmly believe we all have something, whether, you know, you're struggling or living with depression or anxiety or whatever. And once you get to talk to these skaters, they're like, oh, my God, I thought I did so bad. My anxiety was racing the whole game. I thought I was going to have a seizure or whatever. And you get to talk to these players that like have epilepsy or non-epileptic seizures or depression, or like they were so high because they couldn't function normally. And it's like, how did you get through a game like this? And they're like, well, my team needed me. Mm-hmm. And that's like a really empowering thing about roller derby is that if you can't do it for yourself, chances are you can do it for your team.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I just think that like being a part of roller derby, I've never felt more like empowered by my own body. Right. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like we both have histories of disordered eating. And and just being a woman in society, you feel really shamed about your body all mm-hmm. the time.
All the time.
And I think
what you're talking about.
but like in roller derby, I feel so strong. Like I can see my body doing things and helping people that I mm-hmm. care about. It isn't like it is for me, but it isn't just for me. Like it's also for my team. And like I'm really proud of like what my body is able to do.
Right. I think it's also really important that we spend so much time talking about roller derby, but like it really is like the thing that is most important to us because it led us to, you know, create this brain baby of a podcast and everything.
But sounds like more than just roller derby.
It is. It is more than just roller derby. You know, when we need help, we reach out to our team. We need a move, we reach out to our team. You need somebody to like come pick you up because you had a rough day, you reach out to your team. And like you have a really good day and you want to go celebrate, you reach out to your team. But the thing in roller derby is that there's no heroes. Like, yes, there's people on the team that score points. So I'm one of the point scorers on our team. But like, I can't do it without everybody else on the team. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm only as good as the people on my team.
And you need to have like a trust level, I would imagine, that you can rely mm-hmm. on someone to be there. And I have to say, roller derby kind of scares the crap out of me.
me too.
Same.
Yeah. But I imagine like if you can't trust your team, there's a safety issue there, right?
Yes.
So like, absolutely. That's another thing is like you know, I think we've talked at least like on friend time about like just like chosen family, you know, who you know, what family you're born into is you don't have any control over that, but you do get to control to an extent who you surround yourself with as you get older and how you create your own support system and your own network and how and all that other kind of stuff and how you use those people around you and they use you to understand more about yourselves through interacting with other people, which sounds like something that you guys are probably doing on your
basically
podcast. Yeah,
cool. What I'm sorry,
Stop apologizing.
There's no sorries in Derby.
That's what I was going to ask.
No, like, sorry in Derby.
What happens if you sorry someone by accident in Derby?
You know what? It happens, and it largely happens because we really care about our people that we're working with. There's a certain amount of allowance where, like, it's Derby. If you accidentally trip somebody,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it happens. You know, like, I go out of my way to at least say sorry for accidentally grabbing somebody's boob. Because, right. like, it happens. When you form walls, you go like this. And you what should be...
Walls? Wow.
Oh, yeah. They're defensive. The main defensive
Yeah, form. It's a triangle. So there's one, two, and then a person flips around and grabs their shoulder. So it's a human triangle. Support. And so what happens is, like, when you go put your hand on the two people's shoulders, sometimes there's a boob in the way. Because, like, you're doing it so quickly.
Yeah.
And it's like, at that point, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I got a black eye from my friend.
Oh, my God.
It was awesome. But also, Derby has taught me to be more empowering of other people and not just people I really care about, because mm-hmm. Derby really encourages people of all shapes, forms, backgrounds to come. And I think anybody is capable of it,
right.
generally. But it has made me, like, try to feel genuine, like, support for people I don't necessarily care about. And right. I think that's really changed my, like, attitude towards others, because I am very complainy about people who bother me.
You and me have that in common. I'm working on it.
But I also, like, those people do still need support and right. I like to and encouragement, and I have to genuinely mean it. And I think I'm, like, becoming better at being supportive of other women, which makes me feel horrible because I have a master's in gender studies. Like, I should, like, academically should know that.
Yes. That's how deep it is.
That is how deep it is. It's fucked up.
It actually requires a lot of research. So for our depression podcast, we actually did a lot of research, and we have, like, what, 6 pages with footnotes and sources. And then we give you resources. So if you are living with depression, we give you resources to go find therapists in your area.
So tell us how you came up with the idea to do this podcast. Like, what was the conception story?
Are my favorite.
So back in, like, February of this year, I got super fed up with the world as we know it. And I don't know what that's like.
Yeah, right.
I hate everybody on a daily basis. And, like, I take, like, weeks off of hating people, and then I come back really strong and vehement about it. And I was venting to her on Facebook Messenger, and I was like, we should start a blog. And she's like, no.
Okay, but to explain that, it's because I have anxiety, and every time I write something or my right. therapist tells me to journal, I'm like, what if it's wrong?
Right, exactly. So then, like, a few days later, I'm, like, back to venting to her about some bullshit. And then I was like, what about a podcast? Let's start a podcast. And she's like, actually, that's not a bad idea.
Hmm.
I love talking about all my opinions, and
yeah,
that's, you know,
and I just, like,
give me a platform.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I love talking about my opinions. I love talking in general, and I love trolling people as well. And that's kind of, like, I think I was trolling somebody that week on Facebook. Oh, and I think that's where that came from.
It's a bad habit of hers.
Trolling.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Oh, as, like, soon as,
like, a troll, what do you do?
Like, as soon as tips. Like a leftist feminist troll.
Yeah, like, it doesn't really matter, like, where you are on any sort of spectrum. Like, if you're being mean to people, I will troll you.
Nice. Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So, like, if you're, like, one of those guys who think that, like, the hashtag Me Too movement is bullshit, I will troll you. But, like,
I feel like you're a troll hunter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Probably. Like, I just have this, like, zero tolerance policy of, like, if you piss me off, I'm just going to burn that bridge. And so, like, we were kicking around that idea for a little bit. And then, like,
also, let's go ahead, say the quote that you want to, and I want to tell them where
it's
from.
May the bridges you burn light the way.
It's from 90210.
Perfect.
We should wrap it, because I feel like you guys have a game to get to.
Yeah.
Okay. When does your podcast come out?
It comes out every other Friday.
What are your handles?
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
It's just at Frau Pow Podcast on Instagram.
Frau Pow Podcast at gmail.com is our email. And we love email notes, because all we get emails from is Twitter. So
nice.
I'd love some love letters.
We got our first email. I got so excited. I like freaked out, made my day, made my week. Yeah. So it's FRAUPOW.
Yes.
If you all are looking for this awesome new podcast.
Yeah.
Find it
on
morebanana.com.
Thanks for having us, ladies.
Thank you.
Much passion. Serena Williams makes history.
If you were a tennis player, who would you want to be like?
Well, I like other people to be like me.
So because we spoke to two badass roller derby athletes, we wanted to give a little spotlight to some other women in sports. And there are a lot of women who've been fucking incredible on and off the court or competition floor. We're going to highlight them, some of them here today. We're also going to be highlighting them on Instagram. So follow us on Instagram to find out some more. So the first one I'm going to start with is Catherine Switzer. So in 1967, Catherine became the first woman to run the Boston Marathon as a numbered entrant. She decided to train for the race after her coach told her that a marathon was too far a distance for a quote-unquote fragile woman to run. But she said, fuck that, and did it anyway.
Fuck that!
At the time, women weren't allowed to officially run, and so she registered under the gender-neutral name K.V. Switzer and snuck in. While she was running the race, an official named Jock Semple tried to stop Switzer and to grab her official bib, but he was stopped by her boyfriend, who just pushed him on the floor. We're going to put a video of that up in the episode notes. She finished the race in 4 hours and 20 minutes. It was another 5 years before women were officially able to compete in the race.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
Billie Jean King. What has this pioneering tennis player not done? She has won 39 Grand Slam titles, was inducted into the International Tennis Hall of Fame. She was the Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year in 1972 and the Time Person of the Year in 1975. She was also awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Obama. Get it? But that's not all. She also fought tirelessly for tennis to be more fair to women, more racially diverse, and less elitist. When the men's tour refused to address women's concerns over unequal pay, King broke away to set up a women's tour. In 1973, at age 29, she won the Battle of Sexes against 55-year-old Bobby Riggs.
There's a movie about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She has spoken openly about her bisexuality over the past two decades, and back in the 70s, weathered a media storm after an abortion she had was made public. Yo, this girl's awesome.
Yeah, she's amazing.
She has never shied away from trying to make the world a more just place for everyone.
And since we're talking about tennis, we cannot not talk about Serena Williams, because duh. Williams is amazing. She holds the most Grand Slam titles in singles, doubles, and mixed doubles combined among all active players. Serena and her sister Venus have revolutionized the style of play in women's tennis and have done so while being the victims of racism from every fucking direction. The media, tennis officials, general society, et cetera, et cetera. She was the highest paid female athlete in 2016 and 2017. And Williams gave birth to a daughter in 2017 and in the process suffered a pulmonary embolism that almost killed her. She penned an article that brought much-needed attention to maternal mortality in general and the unequal care given white women versus women of color that sparked a mainstream and much-needed conversation about gender and racial discrimination in the medical field.
Danica Patrick. Talk about women dominating sports that have always been considered in the purview of men. Patrick is the most successful woman in history of American open wheel racing, and she is the only woman to have ever won an IndyCar series race. Cool. She has been credited with an increasing attendance at auto racing events and improved television ratings.
Yeah.
Those women are awesome. Mm-hmm. She also inspired a whole generation of young women and girls to participate in motorsports, leading them to race competitively. She has been criticized by so many people for being too pretty. Oh my God. For not being a good enough racer, for having an unfair advantage because of her weight. Mm-hmm. But she just kept racing. Many people have credited her with preventing the dissolution of the IndyCar series and for strengthening support for NASCAR.
Badass.
That's amazing. I love that. That's kind of like the thing where people are going to fucking hate you no matter what. So just do it anyway.
Just fucking do it. So now we have Oksana Chusovitina. In a sport dominated by women and girls under the age of 20, this 43-year-old athlete is still internationally competitive. Chuso, as she is lovingly called in the gymnastics community, has competed in every Summer Olympics starting in 1992. She's the only female gymnast to compete in 7 Olympic Games, and she's one of only 2 gymnasts to compete at the Olympics under 3 different national teams.
She competed for the unified team in 1992, Uzbekistan in 96, 2000, 2004, and 2016, and Germany in 2008 and 2012. She has competed in 16 world championships, 4 Asian games, and 3 Goodwill games, and holds the record for the most individual world championship medals on a single event, with 9 on the vault. She is one of only a few female gymnasts to return to competition after having a child. She's a superhero. Like, it's really crazy.
Superhero. Jackie Mitchell, who died in 1987, was one of the first female pitchers in professional baseball history. While pitching for the Chattanooga Lookouts minor league baseball team in an exhibition game against the New York Yankees, she struck out Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig in succession.
Which is so, they were the best fucking players at
and
the time.
And I feel like nobody knows about her.
No, I didn't.
Nope.
I just learned.
She was 17 years old. She struck out, oh my God, who could she have been?
Right?
She struck out 2 of the best baseball players in history because the world is full of sexist assholes. The baseball commissioner, Kennesaw?
I think so.
Kennesaw Mountain Landis voided Mitchell's contract and said that women are unfit to play baseball because the game is too strenuous or they're too good for you.
Right? It's like, it's too strenuous, but she just fucking...
you know what we think was unfit in this scenario? Men's frail egos. Mitchell continues to play for a couple of years, but retired at the age of 23 after she became enraged that her story was being used as something of a sideshow. She was once asked to pitch while riding a donkey.
Meanwhile, I bet you that she could still
kill it.
Kill it.
She refused to come out of retirement when the All-American Girls Baseball League formed in 1943. MLB officially banned the signing of women to contracts on June 21st, 1952.
I'm pretty sure that they opened it back up to women sometime in the 90s.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's actually true. This is one of my favorite stories. That's incredible.
That is amazing. I knew nothing about her.
Doris Burke. Doris Burke was a badass basketball player for Providence College. During her time there, she led the Big Eastern Conference in assists, was a second team All Big East player once, and made the all-tourney team of the Big East women's basketball tournament. She was great on the court, but has made an even bigger impact in the broadcasting booth. She started off as an analyst for women's games at Providence College, but she quickly moved up. She's been working for ESPN since 1991, and for many years was the primary radio host for the New York Liberty. In 2000, Burke became the first woman to be a commentator for a New York Knicks game on both radio and television. But that's not all. She's also the first woman to be a commentator for a Big East men's game and the first woman to be the primary commentator on a men's college basketball conference package. As of 2017, she has been a regular NBA game analyst for ESPN and has become the first woman at the national level to be assigned a full regular season role. That was last year, friends. 2017. Fuck yes, Doris Burke, kicking ass and busting right through that glass ceiling. But can we just say, really quickly, she's fucking incredible. One of the things that really irritates me about sports in general is that you haven't like achieved ultimate success unless you've done something on the men's side,
mm-hmm.
you know, because like it didn't. I mean, it mattered that she was the primary radio host for the New York Liberty, but like
it doesn't matter really until you go up against men.
Yeah. Then all of a sudden you're like the commentator for the Knicks and it's like, fuck yeah. And this is nothing. Doris Burke is incredible. It's nothing against her at all. It's just about like our gendered system and how fucked up it
is. Of course.
But she's amazing.
Misty Copeland, where do we even start? On June 30th, 2015, Copeland became the first African-American woman to be promoted to principal dancer in American Ballet Theater's 75-year history. She didn't start dancing until she was 13.
13!
But seriously, let that sink in. In 2015, she was named one of the 100 most influential people in the world by Time Magazine and appeared on the cover of the magazine. She's fucking incredible. She has danced some of the most coveted and challenging roles in classical ballet, but she has also made her impact as a pop culture phenomenon through dancing atop a grand piano during Prince's 2010 Welcome to America tour and starring in a Diet Dr. Pepper commercial and an Under Armour ad urging people to will what they want. She brought ballet to a more mainstream audience, but more importantly, she paved the way for young girls to dream about a future where they, too, can be a principal dancer in one of the most prestigious companies in the country, no matter their race, body type, or challenges. Misty made it all possible.
She gives me shivers. I just got shivers.
I know. Shivers. Shivers.
Shivers. Thank you for listening to Welcome to My Vagina.
It's time for us to slide on out of here.
On your really healthy vaginal discharge.
We really want to hear from you, so please email us at welcometomyvagina@gmail.com.
Please review us. Please give us stars.
Yeah. Yeah, on anywhere you listen to us. iTunes, Stitcher. Check out Jessie's videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Review her there. Subscribe.
Yes.
Like stuff.
Yes, subscribe to our podcast. Yeah. Also, check out our Instagram because we're killing it at Welcome to My Vagina.
And follow us on Twitter at Welcome to My Vag.
Don't forget to check out Rebecca's awesome writing at franklyrebecca.com.
And now you can even see blogs by a multitude of people at the blog tab on Welcome to My Vagina HQ. Go to welcometomyvagina.com, click on blogs, and we have some really, really, really awesome stuff out now.
We do.
Really awesome.
We're also still looking for more writers. Ask your friends.
Yeah, get involved.
Yeah.
We really want to hear from you.
We want different point of views. Give them to us.
Give them to us.
Give them
and,
to us.
And our great producer who's creepily appeared over my shoulder. So check out, so we wanted to give a big thanks to our producer, Kate, and check out all the other awesome podcasts that are being produced at More Banana.
Yeah, like There Will Be Porn, World Stealers.
Frau Pow.
Yeah. Just Listening.
Awkward Sex in the City with Natalie Wall.
Also listen to I'm Listening with Anita Flores.
Anyway.
Bye.
Oh. See you next Tuesday.
That's right.